Welcome, ladies and gents. Cam Sully is back in the house once again for another exclusive interview. We got indie filmmaker and documentary creator Pamela J. Richardson on here today. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Oh, absolutely. And this was a fun topic to prep for. So, well, once again, you know, I had already been familiar with your movie Teeth and Blood, and this was cool to actually catch up on a underseen documentary you had done that just got re-released on Tubi called Gold Digging for Love of Money.
Yes.
So again, you've done all kinds of shorts and, productions, and our prep the other day was just so much fun, just because essentially you just had to just put it out there. It's like, I want to do all kinds of things and do the best every time.
Right. Exactly. That's pretty much my mantra.
1,000%. And it just seems like, again, we got all these different film groups and, you know, even Indie Film Hustle is talking about stuff that no one even ever talks about in indie film anymore. It's just like, there are so many underseen things that just to simplify it is just impossible. You got to have a reliable crew. You got to have, know if you really want to do something or not. And then you got to make sure to go out and organize the shoot days and find out a distribution of some kind.
Right. Well, you know, things have changed a little bit since streaming has become so popular. A lot more independent filmmakers are finding ways to make money and making deals with distributors even before they get started because,
right. You
know, yeah. Pardon me?
Absolutely right. It's like, you'll see all these people saying, why did they make all these movies back to back? I'm like, because they prepped it ahead of time. They said, 6-picture deal. Got it.
Right. And some of the independent distributors now, because there are so many different platforms, will tell you, hey, we're looking for Christmas shows, or we're looking for this, that, and the other. And then you know that you probably have an outlet if you go ahead and make the film. So that makes it a lot easier to know that there are more opportunities because of streaming. I mean, in the case of Gold Digger for Love of Money, that was released over 10 years ago. But
still relevant.
Yeah, it's very relevant. In fact, maybe more relevant today than it was even when I made it, because now it's being distributed by Tubi, but there are other distributors that are potentially interested in it.
It's a topic that's never going away. I've lost track of how many friends will share random memes that are definitely pertaining to a subject of that sort.
Right. The take that I have as a director on this particular project is that gold diggers come from all walks of life in every social class, and it's not just the cliche bombshell, but it's right. Real. Yeah, and in a tough economy, anyone with an income is a target.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in a tough economy right now, so watch out out there.
Watch out out there. So let's backtrack a bit. Okay. Who were your icons growing up, and what made you finally push the trigger on, I'm going to do some film school and prep on indie films?
Well, I'm not sure that I really can say that I had icons that I was...
you looked up to.
Yeah, I can't really say that. It was more or less that I sort of fell into doing a little acting when I was in eighth grade. Didn't really want to, but was good at it. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I got an opportunity to direct a play, and I realized that's what I wanted to do. I really didn't want to be an actress. It was never anything that I really thought about. Like I said, I just fell into it, and I happened to be good at it. But yeah, that was it. It was directing a play, and then I decided I wanted to go to film school because it went really well, and there were like 2 plays out of my drama class that were chosen to be done before the school, and one happened to be the one that I was directing. So
that's very cool. And what are some of your favorite filmmakers, to name a few, that kind of influenced your style or just appreciation of film?
Well, I guess the first person who probably really influenced me was George Lucas, because I went to USC Film School and we talked a lot about him. Yeah, and now more modern day filmmakers that I like. I like Antoine Fuqua because I like to write. Yeah, I like to write action. I like Christopher Nolan a lot because I think he's very, very insightful. There are just several that I really like. I like, what's his name? Alejandro, I can't think of his name right now. Amolvidar, that's his last name. I like him a lot. And to some extent, I like Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, Pedro Almodovar?
Yeah, Pedro Almodovar.
Yes, nice.
Yeah, Gavin Hood.
Ooh, yeah, nice. So you had seen Sotsi and Ender's Game and a bunch of other movies.
Right, exactly. So as I said, it's interesting because I really tend to write action scripts, but I get hired for, you know, independent stuff or do my own independent stuff. So I'm kind of missing my action fix.
You'll get your moment sooner or later.
Yeah.
You'll get Michael J. White or you'll get, I don't know, some other badass out there.
Somebody. I mean, I have something right now with a partner that's a sci-fi film that we're pushing and shot four promotional videos for, and we really are about to do a serious campaign, but we want Zendaya for that as the lead.
It is possible. It's just wild how in film schools, how they'll teach you about, you know, SAG, ultra low budget agreements and other ways to get people to just come to your agents, but it's still got to be organized and have shoot days and be of a certain presentable quality. And it's just so hard to explain it all and get it all configured in your brain. And did you have some pretty good college professors who was like, okay, I get what you're saying, and now I know how to implement that into my viewpoint?
I would say, I guess I did have a couple who were influential in my career, but none that I'm still in touch with right now. It's been a while since I've been in school. But anyway.
All good.
Because
I always hate it when you hear people go to a college and you're just like, oh, but I didn't learn anything, or I wanted nothing to do with anyone there.
No, I learned a lot because, I'm originally from Indiana. And
nice.
Yeah, and so I didn't have the relative or friend. There was no cronyism in my life before I came to L.A. I came specifically to go to the film school. So I really didn't know that many people. And I had to learn how to network, you know. I'll be honest. I kind of assumed that you go to school to be a filmmaker and you come out and that's what you're doing. And that's not necessarily how it works. You have to start from the bottom.
They leave out the part where you got to develop your voice and how you communicate.
Absolutely. And so, you know, it was a big learning curve for me as far as that goes, because I had to learn that. I didn't know it coming in. And so as I progressed in the business, I just learned more about how to do that. But one comment I wanted to make about being an independent filmmaker right now is that I realized, because I've done a little research on this, that a lot of the big name actors that you think you can't get, you might be able to get. But the key is that you have to find enough money to do a pay or play deal with a lot of these people.
Oh, you know? Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's not impossible, because there are a lot of names that do things for less money if they believe in the project.
Sort of like how anyone can be a producer. We got Randall Emmett and George Furlough, for instance, who, you know, were working with Millennium Films. They're just new Wall Street hustlers. And next thing you know, they just are one of many producers on giant movies like Lone Survivor and The Irishman and Street Kings. And in between, they do all these Cops and Robbers movies with people like 50 Cent and Bruce Willis. It's like anyone can do it and make extra money on the side and do whatever they want.
Yeah, I guess the key too, though, is that the actor or whoever you're bringing to the table has to believe that you can pull it off, but they know they aren't going to lose if they're doing a pay or play situation. They're going to get the money either way. So,
but it
is interesting, because, like you said, there's so many different avenues to get things shown right now, and social media plays such a huge role in just awareness. And so, everything has evolved over the past 15 years, really.
Very true. So you've also done some other PSAs and other docudramas. Do you think documentary filmmaking is just a very undervalued kind of portion of anyone's talents to have in their skill set?
I totally think it's undervalued because, there have been times where people introduce me as a documentary filmmaker and I do get a feeling. But the bottom line is this is just not the case because there are great documentaries that have won Oscars and, you know, and there are always creative ways to do it. It doesn't have to look like... It doesn't have to look like it belongs in a school. When people see, say, documentary, they don't really think all the time of an entertainment value. But like, for instance, with my film, Gold Digger for Love of Money, I mean, it has a lot of entertainment value. It has humor and everything, but it's talking about a serious subject. But
it has very cool lighting and a lot of interesting interview subjects.
Right. And I did another documentary that Dick Van Dyke was the narrator on called
The Money. I saw that. Debbie Allen and company.
Yeah, exactly. And because kids are tap dancing, but it's also talking about serious subject too. It's trying to save that art form that started, you know, back in the day with Fred Astaire and the Nicholas Brothers. But anyway.
And I mean, you mentioned icons like Fuqua and Lucas, and it's like they got their start doing documentaries too. They knew about the whole do enough coverage of everything instead of, you know, endless reshoots. And
right. And just be, you know, just stick to whatever you're doing, just believe in it. Believe that way you can at least finish and then you can work on worrying about selling it as you go. But like I said, things are different now. You kind of have to think about all these things a little bit more while you're doing them, because whereas before you were only looking at maybe marketing companies or the marketing wing of a studio to promote things, now you are the salesman, you know.
1,000%.
Yep. So.
So how would you describe how you kind of like get everything arranged? Cause you got some very intriguing staging and just, you know, moody lighting and just other factors that a lot of people seem to overlook on indie films. Nowadays, everyone just kind of just whips out their phone and just tells everyone walk wherever or say whatever. That's the scene.
Yeah, I think, you know, you always want to work with quality people, people who have experience. And with sometimes you're working with people who know more than you, but you always have to make sure you're dealing with the DP or first AD or whoever, the lighting, the gaffer, the key grip, people who see your vision and want to see it succeed. Because, you know, a lot of times as an independent filmmaker, you aren't working with that much money. So when you're talking to people who might have more experience than you, some people may want to try to take over or diminish you, and you just have to pick the right people. I just finished working as a creative consultant, and I shot the behind the scenes footage on a friend's film that wrapped about 2 weeks ago. And we talked about that before. We talked about that a lot, so that when he was choosing his DP, he made sure it was someone who was going to have his back. Because on his previous film, which did very well, by the way, it was called Cross the Line, and it had Ice T in it. I would get them confused.
I've seen that. That was like a TV One movie or something like that. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that was with Millennial, but distribution. But it still did really well. But I just remember him saying that he felt like he was a stranger on his own set, so he made sure that didn't happen. So again, it's really important because making a film is a village, and you have to make sure that, you know, there's one chief and everybody else is supporting your vision for the project. It's not about you, but it's about the finished product.
It's a very good point. I've seen some TV actors who have just started directing for the medium note that many directors are afraid to approach them and they're not sure if they want to be bothered with the director because, you know, all it takes is just not getting along with the personas that day and they're here to stay, or other feathers get ruffled. So it's very interesting to hear you just kind of point out is like, make sure everyone feels welcome with each other instead of fear mongering.
Right. Cause like I said, we're talking about a village. A film is a village. Everybody counts.
Everybody.
Yeah. The set designer has a lot to say about things. So, you know, these people have to want to be working for a collective cause, and that's the good of the project.
1000%. Have you been pretty good at just avoiding any scammy businessmen and just other filmmakers who, you know, want to be unprofessional and just take over a film set?
I've had people try, but I'm pretty assertive, for lack of a better way to put it. And I don't mean that in a negative way. No, I've had that. And being a female, let's just be honest.
Yes, there's still a lot of toxic people out there.
Oh, yeah. Especially when I was doing a lot of music videos, I directed a couple, but most of them, when I was doing it a lot, where I was either production manager or producer on it. And there were times where, you know, and there was always another producer as well, where if that person hired the people, there were times where I felt like I was disrespected on the set, people not listening to me because they didn't realize, you know, who I was. And that's just something that, again, it doesn't make me want to be necessarily confrontational or anything, but I have to stand my ground. And then I just know these are people I don't want to work with, because again, it's not about me. It's not about your ego. It's not about you not wanting to listen to me. It's about the project. And
1000%.
Yeah. And ultimately the client is going to be unhappy and doesn't want to hear about, the client doesn't want to hear about what problems you had because you chose these people. And if I'm a producer, whether the other producer hired him or not, that's not their problem to hear about. So problem solving as a producer is just, that's just the name of the game. You have to solve the problem, whether it's personalities or if a, you know, I worked on a video, by the way. It was a Montel Jordan video, and I was either production manager or producer. I think I was a producer on it, but because I worked on a couple of his videos. But I remember that we had a baby, like a newborn looking baby. That's what we needed. But we had a kid who was a little older than a newborn who got sick at 10 o'clock the day before he was supposed to be on set at 6. And I just remember one of the people in his camp overhearing me like on the phone trying to scramble to figure out what about other babies we saw, whatever. And it just so happened that this person knew of someone who just had a premature baby. She called the baby, and the baby looked young, like it was just born. So it was like a gift from God, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, from the universe, if that's, you know. That happened that way. But if there was no baby on the set and we're set to shoot a baby in a hospital, whose fault was that going to be?
Exactly.
But it was, that's one of the more amazing things that ever happened to me. I couldn't believe it.
Covered yourself instead of bracing for impact. It was like, no, I'm going to find a solution.
Yeah. And someone just happened to hear an answer in a better way than would have been had the other child, who was supposed to be a newborn, shown up. So, yeah, that was kind of weird, but never forgot that.
So you mentioned some good points here on, instead of just spending time worrying, just continually problem solving and then reminding people, hey, this is not here to be a measuring contest, but we're going to have a problem if you're not giving anyone any level of respect and you're not responding to my commands, and I'm the goddamn director, you know. Right. So this has been very cool to just, like, it's not easy to do. There's just, you know, people are people, and unfortunately sometimes they just refuse to show any kind of respect, or they just want to, they think it's an hour to goof around when you, 2 hours without anything shot is already a pretty bad day so far, you know.
Right. Now I want to ask you a question.
Yes. Because
My issue has not been more or less people not doing their jobs. That wasn't it. It was just more like people trying to not respect me. But everybody generally, for the most part, I would say, in a key position throughout my career, has done their job for the most part. Have you experienced that a lot, where people are goofing off and not wanting to do their jobs?
Unfortunately, avoided most of those amateur sets, but on occasion, there's just going to be someone, you know, they're sleeping with the one of the actors, or...
Oh, yeah, I've had that.
Or
yeah.
They're just, again, they're just... They said they're going to do it, and then next thing you know, an hour has gone by, and it's pretty clear no one's in agreement with each other. And, you know, pretty often you can tell ahead of time, hey, I can totally work with this, you know, music artist, this rapper, this rock star. They get it. They know they need coverage or everything. You pretty much set the rules ahead of time, but there are still some times where it's just like, okay, you're nodding your head, but that's just so all shut up when... I really need you to know we got to change it now. Otherwise, let's just call it a day and until your producer finds out a better schedule and actually pays us, you know, it's just, you gotta make sure everything is concrete. I've now had to make sure with one filmmaker buddy of mine that we make it very crystal clear in bold letters, we'll be paid upon completion instead of I pay you now or this or that, or you're going to play games and hold my footage hostage. None of that. I will gladly blacklist you if you're going to just play games. No one has time for that. And I've had other pals who have talked smack about me just because they asked me a question on the spot and they were joking and I made a joke back. And it was just like, no. You don't get to do that. You don't get to talk shit about people and then act like, you know, I was the one being unprofessional when you invited it, and it wasn't unprofessional. It was to a private 2-minute chat and joking. I was still holding the lights and running errands and making sure that, you know, catering was getting here on time. And for you to just be like, oh, that person's just not serious and everything just because I don't like them. It was like, no, screw you.
Yeah, I get it. Now that you're saying that, you do remind me of a situation. Yeah, I have been in that situation.
It's very common, and it's even more annoying when it's people in a way more lowbrow profession. It's like, okay, you're doing all these music concerts and even other more lowbrow kind of movies, and you're telling me, you know, this person has no vision and everything. You're one to talk. So it is very annoying to have to shift through, you know, was it an instance where you heard a conversation that wasn't meant for you, or was it just someone who was going to speak their mind anyway and it just happened to be a very unpleasant message?
No, you're right. Yeah, I have been in those situations.
I don't expect anyone to not be in, but it is just very annoying because nothing can brace you for it. It's kind of like when we assume that any job we take, our boss is being professional, or that, I don't know, you have an understanding sick day. You never know how it's built until you're inside the fort itself.
No, you're right. And I did remember something. I had a situation once where someone more or less held my footage hostage by just not doing the work. And so they really made me late on a deadline, and it was with a really good client. And I never got hired again, but it was an important, really important thing. I did deliver, but it was later than they wanted. So, and I had to replace them, get my footage and replace them. I forgot about that. Wow.
I didn't mean to bring out unpleasant memories, but I mean, I know what you mean, where it's just like, it really can be annoying how you can take the blunt of something just because someone left something important out or didn't make an indicator enough. Hey, we need this or that. In addition to that, it was like, well, you didn't say that, but okay.
Well, you know, and it goes back to what I was saying about who you surround yourself with. And, you know, I don't even want to say this, but I'm just going to say it anyway. I noticed, just being, like I said, a female, how people take things coming from me versus other people, other, you know, males or whatever, because I'm thinking of that guy who held my footage hostage. Or inadvertently, whatever, but I just think about how many mistakes he made over the years that I've known him, whether it was on my project or just working with him on other people's projects, and how he just kept getting chances and chances and chances.
So let me riddle you this. Was he using a red camera?
No, he wasn't.
This is not an attack or a dispute on what camera is better, but I noticed a lot of people who for a while they were just using the red camera. Just because they knew if they goofed off or made a giant mistake, they could correct it. But it would still be like 17 hours later, you know?
No, and he wasn't always doing the shooting. Sometimes he was doing...
editing.
Yeah, he was editing. And in this case, he did shoot. But I remember I ended up getting on the camera myself, shooting a little bit myself because he was just so distracted. I don't even want to get into all the details of that, but it had to do with a woman on the set that he was involved with, and he just forgot it wasn't a love fest. It was a video. So yeah, it wasn't a video. It was a promotional video for.
I feel your pain. I think I was even on a Faith production, and for whatever reason, there was people doing a lot of not so faith type things on there. It's like, Jesus. So you guys are all involved or know each other too well. And by the way, this is basically a wedding video. This sucks. We need to make it be more theatrical. So what are some other pre-keyed elements that you often do aside from just, you know, have lunch with people and get to know them a little bit, that makes you realize, you know, okay, they're not good at taking any kind of direction, or unless it's someone who they're friends with, or they're talented, but their deadline doesn't work and scheduling doesn't work with me in my point of view. How do you sample through all the grit, all the gist of what people are saying, and make sure, you know, it's not going to be any communication or any other kind of problems?
Right. In other words, to make sure they're a good fit.
Well, yeah, they're just their heads in the game. It's not anywhere else.
Well, usually, especially if someone's in a key position, they're going to tell you who they are, and really, you know, in conversation, you're going to know kind of what you're dealing with, and a lot of it just depends on you having faith in yourself. Because I think what happens a lot of times with independent filmmakers is if we go, okay, this person has all these credits, but they're willing to work for this money. But there's a trade-off. If they're going to dog you out on your own set, or they're going to, and the other thing that people could do, which has held me up too, doing the documentary stuff, is them getting bigger jobs while you're doing this. And you might as well. And then, yeah. So the issues of how people treat you, as someone said to me years ago, and I hear it all off and on through the years, but you have to teach people how to treat you, so to speak. So when someone's telling you, look, I'm doing you a favor, I've got other stuff to do, you already know that's not the person for you. Yeah, I'm doing it for this amount of money because I just want to help you out. But are you really helping me? Are you going to hurt me in the long run? Because whatever you're doing is going to be way more important than what I have going on. So you have to listen to your intuition, and you have to believe that when one door closes, another one opens, you know, but we often stare so long upon the closed door that we don't see the ones that open for us. That's the saying that I like. And it's true. So you have to, I don't know if I'm really answering your question in the way.
Oh, you totally are. Cause essentially you just read them up from head to toe.
Right. You have to, and you have to be honest with yourself about, is this going to work? You know, am I going to be able, because the worst thing, and sounds like you've probably been there, is to get embarrassed on your own set by someone trying to belittle you.
I've been patient enough, but there have been plenty of times where it's like anyone else would have totally bitch slapped this actor who just literally got in your face and just roasted you, or saw what they could get away with. They're no longer acting. They just don't. But like you say, it's like you got to keep order on the set. And the minute there's a, you know, breakdown or whatever, the last thing you need is a YouTubeable moment, and they're making you look like the person who, you know, instigated the argument, or just anything, any messy melodrama, life is too short. This is not worth it. And like you say, it's a matter of also just, you know, there's yes and there's everything else. If you can't bother coming to the meeting, then just don't bother coming to this film set, you know?
Right, because they're all they're doing is
stalling. They want to be reminded that they're needed. It's like, well, I don't have time to read your mind. Either get here or don't.
Right, and you don't have to be, I mean, there are ways to say these things without being, like, hardcore about it. But then again, you have to judge who you're talking to, and maybe that's the only way you can get your message across to certain people. And, you know, again, being a woman, I hate to keep going back here, but I do find that sometimes I have to temper how I'm going to say things. And it's not just working with men, it's with women
too. There's a lot of guys and even women is like who hate being told by the other gender what to be told what to do. It's just one of those things. And sometimes you don't know how to read into it. I saw men are very bad, for instance, in terms of knowing if two women aren't getting along.
Right. And I'm not saying that just men do that. I've learned that it's women too, because we're still in a patriarchal society. And I still think that there's more deference to a male, even by women. I'm not going to sit up here and say, oh, all women are kumbaya. Then no, that's not true.
That's so true too. Everyone wants to get into the culture wars. Like, it just goes back to simple understanding and listening instead of acting like what one gender or what one, kind of group does versus others don't. And it's just like, there are stereotypes for anything. It's a matter of just sit down, listen, and there is no issue. And sometimes, like you say, you can just be the bigger person instead of ridiculing and saying, I did everything, the how-to book, and it still didn't work. It's like, it has nothing to do with whether it did or didn't work. It has everything to do with just that person. It's like, they weren't ever going to take your advice or do what you asked to begin with. And it was a lose-lose to begin with. So you just should have, you know, it's kind of like when gambling, just know when you're just not going to win any bigger and just, you know, cut your losses.
Right, exactly.
Oh. Looks like I broke up. Can you hear me?
About something, or because they said something a certain way, it's not you. It's really about how they see the world. And you can't change everyone. You have to look at it like, I have a deadline. I have to finish this project. And then I'm moving on to something else or whatever. I have to edit. But you can't allow these other people's negative images and thoughts about you or how they handle situations. You can't take that with you, because every situation is going to be different. So you can't go to the next job going, well, I know this person in this position is going to be an asshole and they're going to try to tell no you it's up to you to figure out who I can work with.
Give in to the bully, and don't, like you say, don't that's so true. I see other people, even see famous people, who do the whole I gotta stroke someone's ego in order to get a performance out of them. It's like, no amount of time and money is worth that. Just
and it may be, but what I'm saying is that understand it's for this project, and try not to internalize the negative experiences and just carry them with you. Like,
it can be just like work. It's like, okay, I worked with them. I wasn't their friend necessarily. Nothing personal.
Exactly. And you don't have to be, it's not necessary to be friends with everyone, but
I can just be a famous person. You put on your resume, you're like, worked with so-and-so one time.
It's a professional respect. And, you know, as people have had to remind me, a person does get, get extra respect according to what their background and accomplishments are. And so we all can, because if we're independent, eventually we're going to go on to something else, as well as everybody in production. Eventually you're going to go on to something else if you stay in the business. So you have to figure out a way to let go of the negative stuff and start with a clean slate every time you start a new project. That's not to say you can't remember, because if you think, well, you know, these people took advantage of me and now they want me to do another project, of course you get to choose. I don't want to do it. But sometimes we make choices because we need money and we want to get a credit. So we make these choices. So when you're faced with the same people doing the same thing, because they never were going to change with you, they might change for somebody else, but not with you, then, you know, you have to be willing to go, well, dang, I should have known, and next time I won't do it again. And just don't do it again, because there are other opportunities. Sometimes you have to create them. You know, everybody's not knocking on your door offering you things, but you just have to somehow find the faith in yourself to push forward, is kind of what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And sometimes just have a chat with the film crew and some of the talent and just let them know, hey, this is how I do things. And it's always good to have just other assistants, other people in the room with you. So there can't be any, he said, they said, you know. It's also just one of those, you know, to remind yourself about the rules. It's like, okay, actors don't tell directors how to direct and directors don't tell actors how to act. But that seems to be another one that's lost on indie film sets. You got to remind everyone, hey, how about we try this? It's tough to remind everyone, hey, you got to put it in the form of suggestion. Don't put it in the form of an order.
Right. That creates chaos. So true. That is very true.
There was one dipshit who, take this with a grain of salt, he claimed he was being like extorted by someone who claimed to have worked for Lionsgate. It's like, I think that's just an idiot who's trying to steal from you, but whatever. But I would tell him that whole rule, and he's like, well, I don't really agree. I'm like, it doesn't matter if you agree or not. That's the rule.
Yeah.
He didn't like that. I'm like, well, go figure. Keep doing your stupid movies in the woods where you're not paying anyone and to do martial arts and not getting anything done. But it does stink to have to sometimes tell people, it's like, hey, they might have gotten you into interested in doing this, but it does stink to have to sometimes say, if you invite them anywhere near this film project, I am not working on it.
Yeah.
Nothing personal, but I hate them. They suck. They're not good. They're not what I want in this project, and nothing against that. That's not meant for their ears. This is for yours. And it sucks to sometimes you have to just say it another way. It's like, well, I'll think about it, because I know that you're pretty loyal to this person and everything gets back to him, regardless of whether or not I say this is a private chat. So it does stink to have to sometimes be secretive with your friends. It's like, yeah, you know, this is as secret as my bank account number. I'm just not going to say it to you.
Right. And that's probably smart. A lot of times you just make a decision within yourself, whether you want to work with someone or, you know, what decisions you're going to make in the future. But
I had a sound guy who was a friend of a director pal, and I told the director pal instantly, he's like, what the fuck is up with your friend? I just said that to him in his message. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I showed visual proof on the text messages and everything. First they say they want to do it, then they're getting angry that they're being told to sign and return the paperwork, then they go on a temper tantrum saying, I don't want to sign it anyway, or I don't want to work on this anyway. And then finally, the director had it with him and said, fine, you're fired. And he just made a big scene. Oh, but I just signed the paperwork. It was like, apparently he didn't want to do it anyway. So
and he would have been a problem.
Exactly. Yeah. He might have recorded without the sound on and given us a bad name with our actors and other thing. And it does stink that you just got to do all that pre-screen back and forth messaging. If telling you what to do, and if you're just too proud to just say, no, not interested, then do that instead of, you know, getting so annoyed that we had 10 different exchanges and you just couldn't bother to say, you know, I'm not feeling it. I don't want to do it. Whatever my stupid reason is, I don't want to do it. And like, just say that. I will always call uncle. I will cry uncle instead of just, I'm not feeling it. Like, can we have 5 more arguments or chats? It's like, no, say yes or no. It's not what we're going to do.
No, I hear you.
But it is annoying to have to sometimes tell people. I did ask another director pal the other day. I was like, whose project is this? Yours or your actor who's also a producer? And they didn't give me an answer. So I'm waiting on that answer. I was like, this is not a loaded question. I just want to know who's running the show. Who am I answering to?
Right.
But it sucks because, like you say, sometimes people get offended by even the simplest question, like, oh, so what time do you eat? Or how do you want to go about this? Well, what was the point of the meeting? All that? I'm just asking you. I'm trying to be on your level.
You just made me think of something else.
I'm not trying to find all these traumatic memories, but I know what you mean. It is annoying to feel the pain. And you mentioned a good point the other day on how do you find people who aren't going to be snobs about, you know, working with a certain kind of camera or budget. I saw one casting call the other day and people were being total just horses behinds doing the whole, oh, if it's paid this X amount of money, it's amateur. I'm like, amateur, people use words that they don't know the meaning of anymore. It's kind of like woke. Anything that can be an insult, that just throwing it out there. And this is like, amateur means it's unpaid. If I'm paying you something and it's 140 and you're not cool with that and it's a short, I get it. But don't say it's amateur. Right. Make great things in your backyard.
Yeah, but you can't control how other people see things. And again, you still have a choice of whether, I mean, you're asking them to do something. They can decide it's amateur in their eyes and you can decide not to work with them. You know, everybody's still has a choice. And if somebody's saying that to you, and people will say stuff like that, maybe not necessarily.
It's unavoidable, and it's always good to just block certain people on social media. If you see them being jerks to other people's job postings, then it's like they're already the wrong person. They're already showing their true colors. That's good for you. That's a wake-up call. It's like, okay, don't hire this person under any circumstances. Nothing personal.
Yeah, or, you know, it may be that they may learn a lesson and become better for the next person, the next person's project. You never know. I mean, if you think about it with actors who have names, everyone's clamoring to get them to be attached to something. They can't, you know, go out without someone asking them for something. That's why I tend to, when I'm around people who are of note, I just have regular conversations with them. And I hope that they'll just ask me what I do and then I ask. I don't tend to, maybe because I'm in LA and in Hollywood, I don't tend to just like bother people because I know they're just people. As you know, once you get to know a celebrity, they're just people. You know, they have the same issues that you have. And they just want to have fun sometimes and not feel like everybody's clamoring after them. So it's a fine line. It's really hard. And some people are really good, though, at being super aggressive in those situations. It's just not real comfortable for me. And they just go, well, there's Jason Momoa. I'm just going to ask him to do. And it may work for them because they just have that personality.
They're Joel Silver or Bruckheimer.
Exactly. It may just work for them. You don't know. And you don't know if someone's feeling really giving on a day like a Joel. You never know. And they may say, hey, give me a call. You never know. So right. We all have to kind of operate how we operate and hope for the best. And if you feel like this is my only opportunity, even if you're at a party and you're trying to have fun, maybe you should just ask for what you want. You might get it. That's one thing I found when you catch people off guard a lot of times, is people have gotten things out of me by catching me off guard, and I go like, what the hell did I do? But I gave my word, you know. Right. Yeah, so you never know. It's like, I would like to say there's a formula, but I think a lot of things just depend on who you are, how people perceive you in that moment. You know, not necessarily how they perceive you all the time, but in that moment, you might have a drink with, I'm not going to say Bruce Willis because what he's going through, but you might have a drink with, was Eric Bana at a party and you guys are having such a great time. He may want to be in your movie because I know he does things that are low budget sometimes. He's one of the people I research, Ryan Gosling, I mean, they're Samuel Jackson. Sometimes they do things just because they want to do it. So it's not to say, so.
You made a good impression on them and you're like, okay, screw it. I don't care if it ever comes out or not. I trust you. You don't seem robotic. You don't seem staticky. I'll do your movie, especially if it's just one day. What do I got to lose?
Yeah, they may say that, and you know, they may want to know obviously a little bit about more about you to make sure they aren't just giving their time to something that's not going to work out on any level. But It can happen. I mean, it happens to people all the time.
Totally. And that's such a good point. It's just like, there's many people who will say yes. There's many people won't say yes, but it's just researching and being on their level. Sometimes just finding some random thing they said in an interview is like, see, you know me, you get me. Awesome. You're actually listening. So therefore I trust you.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. That's probably smart. If you know you're going someplace where a certain celebrity or DP or whoever it is, producer that you want to get next to. Yeah, exactly. Do a little research. Be prepared.
Mm-hmm. And if you just are just saying the questions that they've heard 100 times, that's already a turnoff to them. And I tried to do this also on this show too. I mean, I know I try to ask stuff that is not being asked. And one that I noticed that every indie filmmaking podcast, not a diss, just a fact. They are afraid. They're afraid to ask. It's like, how do I make this look any kind of, you know, engaging or watchable or of a certain level? And it seems like everyone, they just want to talk about 1080, you know, HD and that's it. It's like, no. There's so many other things to this. It's like some people really want to know about like the tech you're using versus how you use a pitch, or they got one or the other, but they don't got the other down to a T yet. And they want to know, well, how would you go about that? That would actually, I should start implementing, because people want to learn. People want to engage. And same thing with entertainment. People want to see something that isn't exactly being used, instead of I'm a forgiving of any movie that's made for 10K. It's like, no. The best people are the ones who go out and they try and make something that, you know, that they indicate within the first, I'm sure you got this from your film lecturers, is like, yeah, establish what you want in the first 20 minutes.
Okay, that kind of thing. Yeah, so the first thing I was going to comment on was the technical aspect. I think is,
sure.
I mean, I personally, one of my favorite cameras to work with is the Arri Mini, because it always gives you really good color. I think it's important for independent filmmakers to understand the value of diffusion and expense.
Nice.
The colors that you need to use in order to set mood and all that. And I think a lot of times, especially if you're just going out and you're shooting on your iPhone 13 Pro Max or something, maybe people aren't thinking about those kinds of things. And it's important to have certain positions, I think, even on an independent film are really, really important. Obviously, you want to have a first AC whenever you can, you know, who's pulling focus for you. But I think it's important to have video village on some level, so you know what's happening, and that you aren't, even if you're working with a DP who's super experienced, you really know what you're getting, you know. So there are certain people that I think are going to help you that you have to try to figure out how to pay. You know, even like a script supervisor who's actually doing it, you know, on a device, whether it be an iPad or whatever, who's actually paying attention, so you can go back to her and go, you know, and look at continuity and those kind of things. So there are just certain people that, even if you're doing it independently, that are going to save you when it comes to what it looks like. You know, my stuff has been independent, but I know when I'm not embarrassed to show it, because the colors are always generally there. It looks professional. It doesn't look like somebody just, I don't think it does, just took something and shot something. So we're always thinking about that. That
was real cool, because I see so many people that just get ignored. And it's like, if they don't feel like they're valued at all, they'll gladly not show up. And so next thing you know, everyone's doing three different responsibilities while they wait for a replacement. That's not cool.
Right. And if you set a good tone with your, everyone is going to want to be there anyway, because again, it's still a village. So if you, as the head, the director, says,
even if it's a short for 48 hours, that still means a lot.
Yeah, and everybody's going to get on board if they feel appreciated, and if the people that they respect you, they're going to give you that respect. You may be working with a DP and you don't know any of his crew, but if he's deferring to you and not and you know, not acting like he's taking over your project or something, they're going to defer to you the same way. So it's really important to set that environment, but also, even like I said, with low money, you have to be willing to allocate the money you do have to the important things. And you, I don't feel like you can do anything without having some sort of gels and diffusion and all, and to make it right. Because the important thing I find about independent filmmaking is that you can, in my opinion, and this is the next thing I'm, one of the next things I'm going to do, is I'm looking to do a film that has very few people, but is just very clever, right? Because you right. can have a small project that still is just so unique and so clever, and but you don't have to spend all that money on cast and food, because you know people go, well, the cast isn't costing that much, but yeah, all the food and all the other stuff that comes with the cast ends up costing more.
And if know? No one eats it, ooh, even more wrong sauce. It's like, I have all these tacos and I basically bought my grandkids' lunch for the next 10 weeks. That's not cool. That was supposed to go to the film crew, you know, and they didn't eat it. And it does sting, like you say, to have to tell, have to re-explain yourself. But that is so cool to just say, hey, we can simplify this. People make movies all the time with literally 2 to 5 characters in a room. So let's focus on that.
You have to be in a room. I'll give you an example. I don't remember the name of the film, and I'll make this quick because I know our time is coming to an end. But there was this, I can't remember the name of the film, but there was a woman whose car broke down in the woods. And so she went to try to find someone to help her with her car. And she ended up going to the cabin of a guy who was a domestic terrorist. And it was about him tying her up and, you know, finding out there was an agent upstairs that he had already caged, but it turns out she was an undercover agent. And all it kept my interest 100%, but that was mostly her trying to get away, her trying to see if she could save the other agent who gets killed. And then they had like a SWAT team come of 2 people, but it didn't bother me because the concept was so clever and the acting was good. And
I was familiar.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it.
The actors?
They were people I didn't know. And that's the thing. That's the thing, too, that I've learned about independent filmmaking is that distributors want good product, a new product right now. So you don't necessarily have to have names as long as what you're doing is clever. So what I'm saying all this to say is look at your budget. What people do I really have to have in order to make this look professional? And what concept can I do for this money? Those are all things you have to do from the beginning because, I mean, I personally never worked on any production that didn't go over budget. Things just come up, you know. It may not be that much over budget, maybe $1,000, but everything goes over budget. They go over budget on TV shows and on films. There's always overages. On music videos, that's just how it is. Everybody goes, I can do this for 10 grand. No, it's going to cost you 20. So
there's plenty of off the record costs that the studio is not going to cover that you just had to do. It's like, I got to keep the rapport. We're going to have to spend a little extra on some food or get a new camera lens just to make this shot 5-second shot just stand out more. You know?
Yeah, and things do happen. Someone might trip and knock over a light. You never know. But I'm saying studios know that, you know, they know that is going to go over budget. And but the bottom line is if you have an investor, once they're in, for the most part, they're going to pay those overages as long as you aren't trying to take advantage. And they know that because it's either I'm going to pay this and get it done or I'm going to lose the money I did put up. And if you're the investor, I mean, what are you going to do? You're 3 years into your shoot and you need, you know, an extra 5 grand. What are you going to do? You're going to go try to find that money.
That's a good point because it does seem like everyone wants to be in a dispute and just set a precedence just for the hell of it. And it's just like, no, don't say stuff and then be like, ah, oh, I'm going back on all these promises. Sorry, man. I just wasn't in me. And it's like, no, no, no. Now your word means nothing. Just go with the flow. Just outline what you think you can realistically do and then do it. Try and implement.
And right.
It stinks. It does stink to have to just sometimes just realize, you know, I'm just too ambitious. I'm my own worst enemy. It's like, we don't need to hear all that. You can just say, you know, I'm thinking of doing this. What do you say?
You know, just... Yeah. And the other thing I'll say about that is that, the important things for any independent filmmaker is to work things out on paper before we get started, because that's going to
thank you. If you can't put it in writing, it's already not good.
Yeah, or if you realize, okay, this is going to cost me this much if I do it this way, you got to put it in that script and that breakdown, whatever your changes are. Some you have to be able to divorce yourself sometimes from what you really want and just make set realistic goals, or you'll never get it done.
Mm-hmm. Do you think many can't, one good way to make sure everyone's on each other's level is just make sure that they remember the screenwriting rule, you know, figuratively, you know, 90 pages equals 90 minutes. Sometimes it's just hard for people to do. They're just like, well, what if it's only, you know, 60 minutes? I'm like, that's fine. We can work with that. The rest of that, it's all action frills or shocking moments. Okay. Well, that's going to take additional minutes, but you know, if it's 40 minutes, we don't have enough for, you know, a movie.
Right. No, that's true. That's very true. And so like you're saying, however many pages, that's how long your film is going to be.
And you people want to be argumentative. And it's like, it's just something to go by. It doesn't mean you got to go by it. It's just to something to start you off. And it seems like even the best intentions, people just seem to just want to complain nonstop. And it's just like, it's just a starting point. It is just there for you to refer to. Not saying you got to use it, but for the best results, why turn it down?
Right. And so preparation really is what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about.
I think another long lost art is definitely the improvised movie. Is like some wacky comedies have done that, Super Troopers, Beverly Hills Cop, Caddyshack, and it's just like, you can improvise a movie, but you got to have some template. It's like, we do or don't do this. We film something every day instead of just make it up every day and we don't know what we're doing anymore.
Right, right, that's true.
And I see so many other people that are like, that can't work. I'm like, it might work if you're both a comedian and you got enough people on set who know how to do enough kinds of different comedy instead of find out after the fact, this is whack. This is awful.
No, you're right. And you know what? I am going to have to sign up pretty soon because I have to be somewhere right now. But okay. Anyway, so yeah, I hope that I answered a lot of questions.
Oh, you totally did. And anything else you'd like to promote before you go?
Well, I would like everyone to go to Tubi TV and see Go Digging for Love of Money, and definitely follow it. And if you like, look me up. I'm on all social media. PJ Rich 729 is my Instagram. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, Pamela J. Richardson. So, and I do appreciate the interview. This is really good.
Absolutely. This is very eye-opening and very cool to do. And you be safe out there.
You too.
I try my best. I'll definitely try to get you back on another time if we're talking of, if it's just talking a film franchise or a music band, I'm like, hey, let's see if this is in Pamela's realm. She likes this.
For sure, I would definitely come back.
All right, phone's ringing, so send you on your way. Best of luck out there.
Thank you. All right. Take care, Cam.
Anytime, Pam.
We'll return after these messages.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsey, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win Show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
We let things pile up in the DVR, we add them to our queues, we wait for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We time shift. The Time Shifters Podcast. Sci-fi, horror, fantasy, superheroes, comedy, action, film, television, maybe some not-so-current events. Find us on iTunes or at timeshifterspodcast.com.
Cool thing about Blind Knowledge is we are in multiple countries. We are worldwide, all across the globe. We are in the U.S. We are in the U.K. We are in Canada, Germany, India, Japan. We're in Australia, y'all. BlindKnowledge.com. Now back to the feature presentation.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.